Solitary Burdens, written by Cupescent, narrated by Rhea314. Fandom Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves, rating Teen and Up Audiences, no archive warning supply. Pairing Edgin Darvis, Zenk Yendar. Edgin can't talk about it with any of the others. He hasn't known Doric anything like long enough to start getting into actual emotional shit, and anyway, he has an uncomfortable feeling. She'd wonder if he was using the discussion as a way of hitting on her. Yikes. Nope. If he says anything to Simon, it's just going to get back to Holga anyway, and he's not talking about it with Holga. They aren't mentioning what he did with the tablet, and what he didn't do. He doesn't regret it. He can't. Not when he can see Kira's face every time she looks at Holga. Not when he can still feel the bruised edges of the hole that punched through his own heart. And he's not ever going to let it seem like perhaps he might. He's not going to let that shadow touch her. And so they're just not talking about it. Absolute fucker of it is that Forge would be perfect for this. He'd make sympathetic little commenty jokes, and they'd get absolutely shit-faced and wake up somewhere ridiculous, and Edgin would feel much better about everything. Because Forge, fuck everything, was always really good at people and their strings. But he's gone, and there's no one else. Except Zenk fucking Yendar. For some reason, sitting beside Edgin on this bleak hillside in the middle of the night. Or rather, Zenk is sitting with that perfect upright posture even out of his armor, and Edgin is slouched with one foot propped on a loose rock, and his lute balanced on his hip, fingers poised on notes he can't play without tears. He's not talking about this with Zenk. Fuck that. What is he even still doing here? What are you even still doing here? Edgin demands, though annoyance is a tepid flame to try and burn off grief. We killed the whatever it was. Don't you have a straight line to be walking? Zenk makes this thoughtful sound, like that was an insightful question and not rampant bitchery. It's dark, and Edgin isn't even looking at him, but he can just imagine the little head tilt that goes with it. He hears Zia's voice in his head, like he had so sharply that very first time he laid eyes on Zenk Yendar, fish and all. My, he's a pretty one. She'd always said it with a smirk, and he'd never know before turning to look what or who to expect. But she was never wrong. An eye for beauty, his wife. Did you say that about me? He'd asked her once. I still do, she'd replied, with the same quirk of her lips, hooking her fingers between the laces of his shirt. Every time you come in that door. The wind blows cold on the hillside, chilling the path of the tears down his cheeks. Edgin's hand clenches around the neck of his lute, and he forces his other hand flat against the strings, calming the betraying squawk before his instrument can give him away. Beside him, Zenk says, I was not here for the wyvern. You could have handled that without me. Which nearly yanks Ed straight out of maudlin because what? They very nearly didn't handle it with him. But the git just keeps on talking. I came, Edgin Darvis. For you. And he lays a hand over Edgin's on the lute. The strings buzz gently against the calluses on Ed's fingers, and that's really what freezes him in place. Is this the first time she's ever betrayed him like this? How could she? For this guy? This guy whose fingers have their own calluses, earned in the most honest of service. Their own scars and scrapes on the knuckles, though nothing compared to the mess of Edgin's own. Every mistake Ed's ever made has left its mark, and there have been plenty. Zenk's fingers are warm and gentle. Edgin's brain feels like porridge. What? He says, looks up at Zenk. Pretty, in the back of his mind, like a fading echo. Grief is ever a solitary burden, Zenk says. And Ed couldn't even call it sententious when the fucker was so sincere. But no man still living need walk alone. That helps jerk Edgin out of this strange moment. Thanks, he drawls, and pulls his hand free to brush his face briskly clear. He's not missing the warmth of Zenk's touch. It's just cold as frost giant's balls on this hillside. That one very nearly made sense. I think you're getting better at this. Zenk, as always, aggravatingly, refuses to take offense. Just know that should you require another as your... I'm not grieving, Edgin interrupts. Smidge too loud. He glances towards the low glow of the campfire, not eager to wake any of the others. But enough of this shit. I'm not. It's been over 10 years. It's been barely a whole moon. Zenk interrupts right back, all gentle implacability. Since you truly let her go. Why do they have to be stuck on this damn hillside, with nowhere Edgin can stalk off to in the dark without turning an ankle? Why doesn't he have anything to hand other than his precious loot, which he isn't chancing against Zenk's head? Probably the one thing in the world that actually is harder than its charmed ribs. Why does the fucker have to persist in being so right? Edgin sits up, curls around his loot, around his own knees, around the knot in his chest. You didn't even know her, he growls, voice thick. That hand settles on Ed's back now, warm through his coat. I see her and the daughter she left behind, Zenk says. He just fucking says. And the memories that shine within you. It's like he triggered some trap inside Edgin. The tears just come in a flood. He gasps and shudders and sobs against his knees, silent enough beneath the ongoing keening of the hillside wind. No one will know. Except the man with a hand still laid between his shoulder blades, steady and steadying, like an anchor holding him to shore even in this storm. Still there as Edgin's weeping subsides, leaving him limp as flotsam washing up on a rock. This is mildly hideous, but worse has happened to him, so Ed can't summon the energy to be bothered. He sits up straight again, looking out into the night. Finally admits it aloud. I'll never get her back. Just speaking the truth he's known and dreaded for far longer than just a moon. And all I have of her are memories that are wearing thin as a shirt. Ed clears his throat, tilts to look back along the length of Zank's arm. Well, I'm sure your shirts are made of finer stuff. Not his most deft sally, but Zenk does him the favor of that faint little near smile. I'm sorry, he says, and Edgin can't even take offense at that, can't even punch him in his pretty face. Edgin sighs. Fuck you. The words have as much sting as a noblewoman's gossamer veil. Maybe in the dark, that expression edges a little closer to a smile. The hand shifts on Edgin's back and then is withdrawn. Edgin doesn't miss the warmth. It's just cold on this hillside, like he said. Zenk just passes through another 3 times in the next month, and while Edgin would rather gargle demon ichor than admit it, it helps Ed keep an even keel. By the 3rd time, even Holga's starting to pick up that something's afoot. I think someone, she says, with a slow curling smirk that makes Edgin's shoulders tense up. Someone has a little bit of a fancy for you. That was not at all what he was expecting. What? Kira nods eagerly, hurriedly swallowing her dinner to add helpfully, He's always asking about you, Dad. She drops her voice a little, rounding her tone. It's actually quite uncanny as she says, "How does your father fare? Does he look toward the future?" Holga's a much less accurate mimic. Is he perchance beginning a new liaison? Edgin chokes on his stew. Am I what? That's ridiculous. Why? Kira asks, getting a bit of a huffy frown between her eyebrows that reminds Edgin so piercingly of her mother when she thought he was being unhelpfully stubborn about something. She sets her spoon down firmly. You're not old, Dad. Not that old, anyway. And you're not bad-looking. Aside from the lips, Holga mutters into her bowl. Kira carries on without pause. And you're a good man. I don't see why Mr. Yendar shouldn't see that, too, and—
No, no, no.
Edgin interrupts before this gets any worse.
No, Kira, thank you, that's— Thanks, but I'm not—
He can't find the words. He has to borrow Zenk's second hand.
I'm not interested in new liaisons.
Kira's frown deepens into a different expression, and this one's familiar too. Edgin's seen it in the mirror. But it's Holga who says, brusque as a brick facade, You're not dead, Ed. It settles over all of them like a slow-falling avalanche, heavy and thick with all the things they don't talk about. The moment hangs frozen. Then Edgin says, Holga. But she grunts, Nope. And lurches to her feet, chair legs scraping. And Kira chirps, Dad, with rising alarm. So Ed mumbles, Damn it, and hurries after his oldest friend. Holga never goes far, not from them, not when she hates leaving the things that are precious to her. But she's surprisingly good at hiding. Then again, Edgin is remarkably good at finding. Remarkably shit at climbing trees, though. Always has been. And she's halfway up one. And that's just not playing fair, frankly. He sighs in the gathering gloom.
Don't make me come up. It'll be undignified.
Not making you do anything, she says from on high. Not exactly true, and yet not untrue either. But he's done things for her, and she's done things for him. They are bound together by years and years of acts and choices, small and not so small. She has saved his life in every way that matters, and he has returned the favor. But it's not about returns or favors. Edgin leans his forehead against the bark of the tree's trunk, rough and inhospitable as it is.
Bringing her back would have been a mistake anyway.
Zenk was right, is the part he doesn't say, and the realization isn't new. There's a rustle up the tree from the world's crankiest, most muscle-bound squirrel.
Don't, she snarls. You get back on that I got her killed bullshit like you don't.
It's not that, Edgin interrupts, because it's not, but also his heart twists and tightens at her words, at her tone, and he can't bear to hear her come anywhere near defending the young, brash, foolish, naive version of him. And that's the point.
I'm not the man she married anymore, and I wouldn't have chosen this, and it's not that I don't have regrets, but I don't want to erase anything that got us here.
It's full dark now. An owl hoots disapprovingly from somewhere nearby.
She'd still love you, though, Holga says from up in the tree. You're lovable.
She makes it sound like a character flaw, but he knows enough to pick the thread of bleak yearning from her voice even in the dark. Easier in the dark, perhaps.
So are you, idiot, he says, and feels faint satisfaction at the creak of leather from above. And I wouldn't be if I left you behind.
Silence, long and dark, and then there's a faint breath of air, a sound no greater than an acorn landing in the leaf litter. Holga speaks from right next to him.
I think you should fuck the pretty paladin. It'd be better for you both. And she starts walking back to the house.
What?
Edgin just about yelps, hurrying after her.
Wait, no, that's not what we're...
That's exactly what we're talking about. Holga's entirely untroubled now. The moments passed. They're not talking about it again, but the space between them is less cluttered.
We can go back and ask Kira if you're confused.
Definitely not. And blame Edgin's moment of fluster for him saying, I don't think he really... He trails off, but he's given himself away. Holga snorts.
Yeah, well, he, she says, pointedly enough to underline what she's not saying about the absence of Ed's protests about what he might or might not want.
Is asking your daughter if you're seeing other people, and he's always just showing up.
That's a different thing, Edgin insists. He thinks of Zenk's fingers, warm over his on the lute. Thinks of him saying, I came for you.
It's still a different thing. He's pretty sure of it. Holga keeps going, as unbothered by his objections as she ever is, which is not at all.
And I also caught him staring at your ass once.
What? Ed only realizes he's stopped dead when she turns on the doorstep to grin back at him, teeth glinting in the light from the window.
Knew he had to have a flaw. Turns out it's shit taste in men. Win for you, though, right?
The door knocks closed behind her again before he can think of anything to say. Problem is that the paladin really is a pretty one. Comfortable to be around as a burr in your sock, but Edgin definitely doesn't mind looking at him. Nice shoulders, neat waist, and a mouth that on anyone else would be called sinful. But his focus is the real kicker. The way he brings so much attention, so much sincerity, so much genuine consideration to bear. Ed's been fighting the urge to bait that attention since the first moment they met, sometimes less successfully than others, and he doesn't even know why, because it's not like he likes being seen, not truly, not honestly, not when so much of him has been better kept in the shadows. But Zenk has looked, and Zenk has seen, even before that night on the hillside, and Zenk, as Holga pointed out, keeps showing up. Just to check on Edgin, he's pretty sure. Like Ed, some stray and injured sheep who's been added, will he, nil he, to Zenk's well-cared-for flock. It's just pastoral care. It's practically impersonal. Unless it isn't. Edgin gets home one day, from chasing down rumors about a grimoire Simon's particularly keen to get his hands on, and Zenk's clearly popped by to check up on him again because Holga's got him working in the garden, digging out the tree-tangled potato patch, stripped down to just trousers and rolled-up shirt sleeves. This is what greets Ed as he comes already distracted in the gate. One look at the flex of forearms as Zenk hefts the mattock, the shift of shoulders beneath the linen, the drop of sweat curling down Zenk's jaw to his neck, and Ed's mouth goes dry, every coherent thought he's ever had in his life swept out of his head. Zenk straightens from his labors, resting a hand on the upright mattock, not so much as in a lean, as ensuring the tool doesn't fall over and cause problems. He gives that smile, the faint, barely there smile, as though he's pleased to see Edgin. Ed hears an echo of laughter and glances towards the house, but he's pretty sure this mirth isn't in the here and now. It's just between him and history and the sunshine, the memory of his wife laughing from beyond her grave. It hurts his heart, but somehow this is the good sort of hurt, the mend rather than the break. It also boots his brain back into business. Ed pulls up an easy grin of his own.
Before you come at me with accusations of dereliction of duty, I did all the way up to that side of the fence, and you should just ignore that pile of rocks. That's definitely meant to be there.
Zenk glances where Edgin gestured. He almost certainly doesn't ignore the pile,
probably in fact catalogs and itemizes and adds it to his own mental list of matters to be attended to. But all he says is, "Physical labor, especially to a practical and useful end, can be a great source of consolation and healing." He is not wrong, but he's so bleedingly sincere about it that the sharp and needling comeback is already sliding along the edge of Edgin's tongue. It would be so easy, and he doesn't even think Zenk would mind. Like he barely twitched over the other barbs Ed's thrown like a handful of straw at a stone wall. But he also remembers the story Zenk told of the fall of Thay, and the echo of history's horror in his face. Edgin isn't Forge. He can't unravel an entire person from one drink's worth of idle conversation. But he trusts in his instincts to know what he's truly seen. It may have been a long time ago, but what the child witnessed still haunts the man. So what Edgin actually says, still smiling and squinting against the sun, is, "That why you do it all?" Zenk looks at him more sharply, just a little more attention. Not the full weight of his focused regard, but enough to strike a spark. "Part of it," Zenk says, and there's something in his voice. Edgin can't quite place it. He's never heard Zenk surprised enough to make a sure comparison. He wants to know more. Curiosity tugs at him like a restive horse against the reins. "Come inside," Edgin says, and earns himself a splinter more attention, not quite wary but waiting for more. "I'll pour you a drink. We can talk." Zenk sets the mattock carefully aside. "Why?" he asks. So simple, so plain. He's neither, Edgin's increasingly sure of it. "Thirsty work, this," Edgin says, nodding to the potato patch, though he doesn't think that was the part Zenk was really questioning. "And I barely know you." That's definitely something like surprise, that twitch of Zenk's eyebrows. "Do you? We have tested our mettle against the same foes and carried the day. Can there be any greater familiarity?" But before Ed's mouth can get him in trouble, Zenk continues. "What would you know?" "Everything." Do Zenk's shoulders ache from the constant stiffness? Does he really think that if he never looks back, he'll never meet a ghost's eyes? What would it take to catch those white teeth and that plump lower lip? Edgin shrugs, helpless and laughing. "I don't know. Anything. I don't even know." He says the first thing that pops into his head, often a mistake. "Do your vows include chastity?" That snort of laughter definitely came from the house. "No," Zenk replies, gentle and serious as ever. He's rolling down his sleeves. He's reaching for his coat. He's leaving. "Perhaps next time," he says. If anyone ever meant it, it'd be Zenk Yendar. But Edgin is extremely familiar with a brush-off. He's ignored enough of them in his career. This won't be one of them. He only wants what Zenk wants to give. It's enough. A gift and more, to be here, at a place where he can want again. "Sure," Ed says with an easy smile, and watches Zenk walk away. And if he goes to sleep, thinking of that twitch in Zenk's eyebrows and wondering how much more expression that face could provide, if he just looked closely enough, if he just tried hard enough, if he just got inventive enough. And if he dreams of limbs bared and the taste of sweat and the feel of firm, muscled thighs beneath his hands. And if he wakes up gasping and wanting and hard as a rock beneath the twisted covers. Well, that's no one's business. Holga mattocks the rest of the potato patch into submission, without so much as a single joking grumble about him chasing away the help. She's never liked manual labor, complains that it's no fun if the thing she's hitting can't fight back, and that was before she spent 2 years cutting ice. Ed gets out there and helps. He gets Kira to help him with that pile of rocks that really isn't still meant to be there. but turns out to make a pretty path border at Kira's suggestion. They argue about history while they do it, getting grunts and barks of laughter from Holga, because Kira certainly read a lot of books in Neverwinter, but not all of the authors of those books knew what they were talking about. He doesn't want Holga's chagrin over how things turned out after her encouragement to harden into disgruntlement with Zenk, and he knows it will if she's left to stew. Not that it wouldn't be hilarious to watch him deal with the full force of Holga's bad opinion, but it seems a poor repayment for the help he offered. Genuinely and openly, and with scant encouragement from Edgin himself, it has to be admitted. And Ed's not that bothered himself. His heart might be taking the wobbly steps of an invalid newly risen from a long sickbed, but he'd half thought it would never rise again, and the unexpected hope isn't going to be tripped or stopped. Turns out it's actually too late for potatoes this year. Edgin and Holga know nothing about growing anything, but Kira read a book about that, too, apparently. "I didn't have much else to do after you abandoned me," she declares, but she does it with her eyes rolling and a familiar sense of drama and a sidelong smirk. Edgin overacts his hurt at the accusation, and Holga's suggesting she could have set up a card game to fleece the Neverwinter nobility, and they're all laughing. They plant radishes instead. The radishes are leafy and lush for harvest when Zenk walks into the tavern where Edgin's keeping his hand in, at performance and a different sort of harvest both. It's useful to keep up his regular haunts where whisperers, and those who trade in them, can find him. Some of those whispers are still very interesting, even if they've no pressing need of money right now. From the quick and direct cut of Zenk's gaze, no hesitation and no surprise, he's come here precisely because he heard it's where Edgin is to be found. Ed's acquired all sorts of interesting things in taverns in his time, but a paladin might just be his biggest haul yet. Zenk looks perplexed. Well, for him. A faint furrow comes down between those luxuriant eyebrows when Edgin greets him with, "Howdy, stranger. Did I not suggest there would be future opportunities for the discussion you sought?" Zenk asks, even as the bartender sloshes two tankards down in front of them. He blinks. "I was going to suggest I purchase the drinks." Edgin grins. "I appreciate the thought, but they pay me in ale." That furrow deepens just a little. "Your services in return for ale? That seems quite the bargain on their side." "You don't know how much I can drink," Edgin points out and grins around his first mouthful of ale. "They brew a good drop here, rich and biscuity." There are other taverns he frequents where he definitely has other payment arrangements. He considers the tankard, the ale's warm hue peeking through the paler froth, and feels his smile grow brittle. "Relic of a time I spent hiding from grief under a thick blanket of beer. And, of course, if you try and keep up with Holga, you either gain a tolerance or die of poisoning." The lightness doesn't deflect Zenk's attention at all, of course. He takes a small, remarkably neat gulp of the ale, and the quick dart of his tongue over his lip isn't quite enough to distract Edgin from watching the rest of his face, with all the fascinating, if tiny, little expressions it contains. Not as inscrutable as all that. Not if you really look. "Everything happens in its own time," Zenk suggests, still looking down at the bar. "Perhaps the gods guide us in creating the habits that will keep us from breaking until we can better manage on our own. Or perhaps it is merely our own better selves, submerged but never drowned." There is probably a pointed comment in there, but Edgin's not really paying attention. "And you?" That gets him Zenk's attention, that dark gaze fully on him like it's pinning him to reality. Which isn't what Edgin was aiming for, but isn't unpleasant either. "Me?" Zenk asks. "Your habits," Ed explains, leaning a little against the bar, narrowing and enclosing the space between them. "You're breaking. Your pain. How's all that going for you?" Zenk opens his mouth, just a little, and nothing comes out. There's a faint blankness on his face. It almost looks like shock. Instinct has Edgin rolling on before the silence can stretch more than a moment. "You like radishes?" He leans back again, reaches for his tankard, chugs half of it in three gulps, while watching Zenk from the corner of his eye. Back to imperturbable. "I have no strongly held opinion on radishes." "Great." Edgin shoves the tankard away on the bar and claps a hand on Zenk's shoulder. Bloody hell, it's like some marble-carved statue. Back to the point. "You helped us plant them. Only right you should help us eat them. Come on, let's go." Holga gives Ed a long, steady look when he brings Zenk home for dinner. But by the time Kira's finished excitedly relating all the latest things she's been reading, Holga's ready to give a solid impression of genial welcome, Uthgard style. There are, actually, a lot of radishes, and it's good to have another person on hand to help get rid of them. Edgin's discovered he actually doesn't really care for them, but there's plenty else to make it a wonderful meal. Between Kira switching giddily between a giggling girl and a blushing preteen, at a table with a very handsome man, and Holga slowly softening under the onslaught of Kira's happiness, until she very nearly smiles at Zenk, and Zenk, in between all of this, glancing over at Edgin with a smile barely visible to a casual glance, but warm as the firelight. But Ed hasn't missed the part where Kira was bringing second servings back to the table and paused to loop her arms around Holga in a quick hug in passing, and Zenk got this wistful look, gone as quick as a pebble tossed into a lake, leaving barely a ripple. Edgin volunteers him and Zenk to do the cleaning up, and if Holga gives him another look, she also goes off easily enough after Kira, who's enthusiastic about doing a little more reading before bedtime. They probably don't need to actually wash the dishes, but Edgin's heard that physical labor, especially to a practical and useful end, can be a great source of consolation and healing. And also distraction. And also, he has to admit, it tickles him to have a mighty paladin up to his elbows in a sudsy bucket scrubbing. That Zenk sets aside his coat and rolls up his sleeves to do it is just a bonus. They chat idly as they work. The ongoing recovery, the rectification in Neverwinter, the restoration work in the Emerald Enclave, Simon's exploration of his newfound magic confidence, rumors both of them have heard from other parts of Faerun. Zenk's sincere as ever. He does genuinely care. It's a little easier to believe in that when Edgin's starting to be able to look up from his own trouble and see other people around him. When he's starting to be able to admit that everyone's worth caring about, even him. They're just finishing up when there's noise from the converted attic upstairs, Kira's laughter, quick and bright as silver, and then Holga's deeper chuckle. Zenk gets that wistful look again, just for a moment, and this time Edgin moves on instinct, his fingers curling around Zenk's on the edge of the dishwashing bucket before he even thinks about it. Zenk looks at him quickly, for him almost at the alert, as though there must be some cause for alarm, or a sudden monster that needs slaying if Edgin's touching him. "How long have you been alone?" Edgin asks. Zenk's fingers twitch beneath his, and his face gets that brief flash of blank shock again, and something in Ed's chest aches. "Not all this time, surely." "I work with the Harpers," Zenk answers, lightly and easily for him. "And you are far from the only adventurers with whom I have shared the road." "That's not what I meant," Edgin points out. "I mean friends. I mean family." "I lost my family," Zenk says. And in the simple words, there is that echo again, that Edgin heard when Zenk spoke of it before, of a child's grief. It fades, but it never vanishes.
So did I, Edgin replies. And they are both standing there, in the home he is trying to rebuild, with the family he is making anew. Zenk looks down, perhaps at the bucket, perhaps at their hands on the edge.
I am not...
He starts, and then, first time for everything, doesn't continue. Ed curls his fingers more around Zenk's, not quite taking his hand, not quite not either.
Who is?
He asks lightly. It's not a joke, but it's too large not to carry lightly.
But you're welcome here, any time you want. You don't need to be checking up on me. Just come.
He lets go and starts to step away, but Zenk reaches after him and catches Ed's wrist. The man's quick, but his grip is gentle, if hot as a brand. From the heated water, that's all. That's what Edgin feels down to his bones.
Thank you,
Zenk says, simple and scaldingly sincere. His hold loosens, fingers slipping from Edgin's wrist, lingering across his palm. Ed's mouth starts up while his mind is still lost. Not an uncommon problem for him. And this time it says,
You can check up on me, too, if you want.
Zenk's grip tightens again, belatedly, catching just the tips of Edgin's first two fingers. The connection feels tenuous, but it's there. Edgin isn't looking down. He doesn't want to look away from Zenk's face. A quick parting of those lips, and then a quick press, and now they're taking on a slight curve. Fuck. For Zenk Yendar, that's basically a smirk.
Edgin, those lips say.
Whoops, Ed's been staring at Zenk's mouth.
Well, he's only human.
He doesn't know what to do with that look on Zenk's face. He doesn't know what to do with the brush of Zenk's thumb against the fingers he still has hold of. He feels far too warm, like he's the one who's been up to his elbows in hot water. Hasn't felt this way in more than a decade. He missed it. Another gift. It has him smiling, has him looking up, meeting Zenk's dark gaze, has him stepping closer, saying, Holga coughs halfway down the ladder that leads up to the roof space they've turned into sleeping quarters. She doesn't smirk by halves, and the expression speaks volumes of just how much shit she's anticipating hanging on Edgin later about this entire situation. If you're finished cleaning up, she says, come say goodnight to Kira.
I should retire to my own lodgings, Zenk says,
and there's nothing on his face anymore. It's been wiped blandly clean, and Edgin hates it, wants to crowd him back against the sudsy bucket and ruffle him all up again. Except Kira is waiting, and Ed's not missing out on any more moments than he has to, not now he has her back. Don't rush off, Holga drawls, clearing the ladder for Edgin. I could use your help with shifting a thing. This one's useless for it. She smacks Edgin's shoulder on the way past, giving him a smirk.
Hey,
Ed says, just a reflex, and he's halfway up the ladder before he realizes. There's nothing in their little plot of land that Holga couldn't manage on her own. She could probably pick up the whole house if she could get a good grip. Edgin stops, nearly at the top, to peer back into the main room, where Holga's knocking her knuckles against Zenk's upper arm as she steers him out into the garden, making some shit up to keep him here until Ed can figure out what happens next. Damn, he is going to owe her big time. Kira, already in her bed with her book tilted so the pages get the candlelight, has a smirk to match Holga's. Are we going to be seeing more of Mr. Yendar now? She asks. Ed sits on the edge of the bed, kisses her forehead. Maybe she's getting too old for that, he doesn't really know, but he doesn't want to give it up yet, and she hasn't complained.
Maybe.
unless Holga turns him into potato fertilizer.
I don't think he'd make good fertilizer, Kira says blithely, setting her book aside and snuggling beneath the blankets. Holga says he's entirely bullshit-free, and that's why he's so good for you.
Edgin wants to smack them both. He wants to laugh out loud. He wants to pull all his people, yes, even the bullshit-free paladin, into his arms and never let them go. He settles for tucking his daughter in. She looks like Zia, and she looks like him, and she looks like herself. And blowing out the candle. Good night, Kira.
Good night, Dad.
Edgin doesn't even bother making up a flimsy excuse. He just asks if he can walk with Zenk, and isn't turned down. And he'll deal with Holga's obvious mirth when he has to. They cover the first half of the walk in silence, and Ed wonders if this might have been a mistake. He thought back at the house, before Holga interrupted. Well, he thought he might be about to get his first kiss in a good long while, no big deal. But now Zenk's scanning the night around them, as though Targos might yield a sudden ambush that needs to be fought off, and perhaps that moment has passed. Probably for the best. Sooner or later, one of them is going to annoy the other one to the point of doing something really stupid. Unclear which. Edgin is both annoying and stupid, so he could see himself fitting into either end of that particular unpleasantry. Maybe he'd somehow managed to be both, where he...
I have not been, Zenk says out of nowhere, and Edgin startles so hard that Zenk's hand actually falls to his hip, where he isn't actually carrying his sword.
He frowns just a little and tries again.
I have not been entirely solitary for the past century. There have been times of less transient companionship. But I have not enjoyed a
slight hesitation, you wouldn't even notice it with anyone else,
a belonging such as you have with your family.
That wistfulness again, and Edgin is some sort of touched, gratified maybe is the word, that Zenk, who always speaks so precisely, hasn't dithered at all about defining the people they left behind at the house. Kira and Holga, Edgin's family. Maybe it's not the family he expected, but it's the one that he grew. Maybe even the one he earned.
It's not a thing you can make or find, Edgin points out. It's not a weapon or an artifact. I don't even know if it's something you can build, except maybe...
He squints off into the night, fumbling with something he'd actively tried not to think about too much.
Maybe we build it with every choice. Every time Holga chose us. Every time Kira gave me another chance. Every time you tried again.
Zenk adds, gentle in the night. Edgin looks at him. There's enough light from the moon and the stars and the infrequent torches to make out the edges of him.
He is beautiful from any angle. I have always made other choices, Zenk admits. I have believed.
A pause, and he actually goes back and rewords it.
I have chosen to believe that I survived for a purpose. That has always been my first priority.
And all of those choices, over a century, had carved him into this, as surely as water hollows out a cavern, or a drunkard polishes his place at the bar. A man of breathtaking skill and bone-deep goodness, but also a man not quite alone in the night.
Makes it easier, Edgin notes lightly. Having a purpose. Having something to hold on to.
He knows it very well. That his was selfish, and Zenk's selfless, makes all the difference. And also none.
But you didn't just survive. You lived. And a life needs more than just purpose.
Zenk stops walking and turns to face him. And in the darkness, Edgin can just see the edge of his smile. Not enough to truly trace its shape.
but he swears he can hear it in Zeng's voice as he says, "I knew there was more to you than base roguish conniving, Edgin Darvis."
"Oh, shut up." Edgin groans, but he's laughing even as he shoves Zeng's shoulder, a shoulder that doesn't give at all. And he's leaning closer. The laughter is stopped in Edgin's mouth by Zeng's. For a moment, the kiss is calm and bright and perfect, like stepping out into frost on a fine winter's morning. Zeng's palm rests lightly against Edgin's cheek, like some holy benediction. It's beautiful. It's delicate. It's enough to bring a prickle of tears to Edgin's closed eyes. But it's also enough to have his veins burning and his fingers itching with how much more he wants, and how uncertain he is that he's allowed to reach for it. Until, as he's drawing back, Zeng catches Edgin's bottom lip, just for a moment, between his teeth. It bursts Edgin's eyes open, sparks his lust in a faint noise from deep in his throat. Zeng says softly, "Thank you." And Edgin lunges forward, grabs Zeng by the back of his perfect damn neck, and pulls him back into another kiss. This one's harder and hungrier, a thing of teeth and tongues and promise. Zeng, who's fast, who's strong, who could turn Edgin aside as easily as an assassin's blade, just steadies him, palms smoothing down his back, fingers pressing into Edgin's spine. His tongue curls around Ed's, lithe and sure as his swordplay, and Edgin is full to the brim, overflowing with plans, for those hands, for those lips slanting against his, for every inch of this perfect body that he's seen, and especially those inches he hasn't. He drags his mouth away from Zeng's and gasps, "Please tell me these lodgings of yours are close."
"These lodgings of mine are close,"
Zeng obliges, without a trace of humor to it.
"Would you care to accompany me upstairs?"
And Edgin says, "Yes," with a vehemence that might be embarrassing, except that then Zeng smiles, a full curve of his mouth that is blinding in the moonlight. It's not a long flight of stairs to the floor of the inn where Zeng's taken a room, but each step in the paladin's wake feels like some sort of declaration, full of intent. Over the years, Edgin's tumbled, with varying degrees of forethought, into liaisons largely brief and tawdry. This is different. Even if it ends up lasting no longer or sinking no deeper, this is still different. Zeng glances back over his shoulder, profile gilded by the lantern he's carrying.
"My, here's a pretty one."
He really, really is. And he's checking that Edgin's still here, following him up. There's nothing on his face, not really, but Ed's learning to see the little details now. He's going to learn more. He's going to see just how much expression he can cause. He's going to enjoy it. There's anticipation on Edgin's tongue, as he runs it over lips still tingling from Zeng's kiss. A sizzle like nerves and excitement runs along his spine. He hadn't really appreciated this feeling the last time he'd experienced it. Not that he'd been too young to know it for a difference, but he'd thought it was simply Zia. Simply true love. Old and battered enough now to know that both love and truth are more complicated than that, and far more beautiful for it. He's still thinking of that. Of history. Of love. Of Zia. When Zeng opens a door and steps back to let Edgin through first. Zia comes with him, into the room of the man he's about to know carnally. She's still with him. Just a memory now, rather than a haunting, and growing thinner. But she'll always be with him. She's a part of him in an entirely different way than she's a part of Kira. She'll never truly be gone, even if she fades, even if he forgets things. It's all right. Edgin turns around as Zeng closes the door behind them and carefully sets down the lantern. "Now," Ed says, stepping closer, not crowding Zenk back against the door, ridiculous to even consider trying. The man could probably manhandle Edgin easily. And there's an interesting thought. Edgin curls his fingers in the front of Zenk's shirt, tugs just hard enough to make a point. "Now," Ed says again, letting his smile get a little smug and a little lascivious. Why not? He's pulling Zenk closer, and Zenk is letting himself be drawn in. "As I was saying, you know what else can be an excellent source of consolation and healing?" One of Zenk's eyebrows twitches, but he leans in and meets Edgin's kiss. Edgin has a lot to say. He's sure Zenk can provide bracing counterarguments. He's looking forward to it. The end. If you've enjoyed this story, please leave feedback to the author. You can do that at a link to the text through this Podfix post. And if you've enjoyed the Podfic, you're welcome to leave me feedback as well. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you for listening.